My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. This is Jeff Lerner, your host, getting to have amazing conversations with amazing human beings. Today, I am joined by one for the ages, the Iron Cowboy himself, Mr. James Lawrence. If you have not heard of James, then you have not heard of productive pain tolerance. He broke multiple Guinness Book of World Records after, and this is actually how I was first introduced to James. We actually have a mutual friend, and my friend told me, he's like, dude, I got this buddy. He ran 50 full-length triathlons in 50 states, in all 50 states, in 50 days. And that was, I want to say 2016. James will correct me if I'm wrong about that. But that was a Guinness record of its own. And then I guess he was like, yeah, been there, done that. Let's see what's next. And last year, 2021, he ran 101 triathlons in 101 days. And by the way, between those, he also rode his mountain bike to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro, ran 235 miles across Greece. And honestly, I could be here all day rattling off these insane feats of endurance and stamina and grit. But I'd rather talk about it with the man himself. James, I am so grateful to have you on the show and excited about this conversation. Welcome.
Awesome. Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, it was 2015 that we did the 50. It seems like an eternity ago, especially after last year, what we did. And just to clarify what a full distance triathlon is, it's more commonly known as an Ironman, and it's a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, wrapping up with a full 26.2 mile marathon run, total of 140.6 miles. People train their lives to do one, and NBC calls it the most challenging, difficult single day in sports. And so I'm humbled to be healthy, to be able to take on these challenges. And my whole goal has always been to, a few things. One, raise money for charity, something greater than ourselves. Two, bring people hope on the journey where they're suffering, maybe not intentionally like we do. And then to find some potential limits of what the mind, the body, and the spirit is capable of. And so that's kind of been our journey over the past decade. And we've had so many unbelievable experiences, got to meet so many incredible people. And I'm humbled to have conversations like this with people like yourself.
Well, I am equally humbled for sure to have you on the show. And, you know, my audience knows, I certainly don't hold myself to your level at all. I don't know. I don't even know what your level is or who else is there, but whatever. But I would say, a pretty deep fan and student of the forging power of intentional suffering. And so I hope that you don't mind. It's probably old hat for you, and I'm sure a lot of people like to geek out on it with you, but I hope you don't mind if we kind of dive deep into some of that psychology and emotion and spirituality and
for sure.
Really make this a conversation just about what this show is all about. I mean, unlocking human potential and sometimes going to really extreme lengths to do that, because if it were easy, everybody would do it. And if life already unlocked everybody's potential, then everybody would already be living their best life. And we know they're not. So
I think it's hard to kind of find what those limits of human potential is. And I think that's what I've ultimately learned on this journey is it's an ever-moving bar. And as you know, I like to frame it in terms of like, look, when you're in the middle of a big challenge, when you're seeking your potential, it seems impossible. Like when you're in the middle of it, you're fighting, you're trying to move forward, you're trying to move through it, you're trying to get to the top of that mountaintop in that moment. And it's always interesting when you get to the top of that mountain, all of a sudden, bam, this bigger mountain that wasn't in view before because it was blocked by the current mountain comes into view. And that mountain is bigger, it's more treacherous, but it's exciting because you didn't believe it was there before, but because you've made a decision in your life to continue to press forward and overcome that moment when it seemed impossible, all of a sudden a new mountain comes into view. And now our perception changes and we have an opportunity, if we so choose to go climb and conquer that mountain. And at the top of every mountain is another mountain that we couldn't see before. And so I think if we can use mountains as the line for potential, those mountains are always, there's always another mountain behind that mountain. And we, you know, we're never ready for the next challenge, or and can't see that mountain until we're standing on the top of the current mountain or the current challenge that we're going through. So discovering human potential is interesting, slippery, dangerous road sometimes, but for sure interesting, because I do believe now, after everything that we've experienced over the past 10, 15 years, that it's a moving mark, and it's truly the perception and perspective that we have as mountain climbers to what we decide is ultimately our limits. I believe it's a choice.
Yeah, I'm really glad you started there. You know, given that I have a book coming out on Lock Your Potential. I have a podcast on Lock Your Potential. I've essentially committed my life at this point to helping people unlock their full potential and design their dream life. That's my mission in this world. And I think sometimes we romanticize this unlocking of our own potential, like it's going to be this place that we arrive at, as opposed to this fairly prosaic, iterative process where every time you achieve your potential, you reset your potential.
Dude, it's a
quest.
It
doesn't happen in a day.
No, it's a constant quest.
Yeah.
Love
and
it.
So, okay. So let's give a little bit of context, because I want to go like in the philosophical depths here and get all esoteric and weird.
Yeah. You got to stop using all these big words though.
Okay. I want to go strange, but let's first go, I don't know, just background. And how the hell did you get into all this craziness? Maybe start there.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't grow up in the United States. I grew up in Canada and just grew up in an amazing household, two parents, one that was religious, one that wasn't, got front row seat to both perspectives. My mom was a dreamer entrepreneur that could never really put it together. My dad was a blue collar firefighter, very traditional. You work hard, you retire, you live off your pension, and that's just how it is. And both of those taught me incredible lessons and values. And I'm fortunate I grew up in a place where I had a good support system. I had great examples, both extremes of that example. And I thought, man, my dad worked so hard and just retired and lived off a pension. I don't want that. And then my mom was like, dude, sky's the limit. Potential is whatever we want it to be, but couldn't figure it out. And so I was like, okay, man, if I could take this dreamer mentality and this work hard mentality and smash the two together, that's the destination. That's the future that I want. And then I just loved sport growing up. Played everything I could in Canada, except for hockey, oddly enough, is one of the sports I didn't play because it wasn't offered in the school systems. We weren't wealthy. We were middle class, obviously. And just played every sport I could until I fell in love with wrestling. And that became the foundation of my physical toughness, my mental toughness. I can draw a lot of parallels or relation to where I am today based on, 7 years of intense wrestling. And had an opportunity and made my way to the United States, met my wife. We've been married 22 years, sorry. We've got five kids, four teenage girls right now and a little boy who's 12. And it's just been a wild ride. And then our journey, I was in fitness my entire lives, and you graduate and you no longer have this competitive fitness outlet. And I wanted to remain physical, and I understood the basis of health, and got into running with my wife. She was kind of a runner and enjoyed fitness. So we started doing that together. And I really struggled with running. It was super hard. I was kind of not a meathead, but like a gym goer, lifting weights. Cardio wasn't my thing. And really struggled with the cardio side of stuff, and had to make a decision at that point in my life. Like, am I going to kind of focus on my inner health, my lungs, my cardiovascular system and all that, or do I just want to look good? And I was like, man, we need to figure out how to do both. I really struggled through my first marathon, hated running, but then found triathlon. And I loved that it was a, individual sport that had three different disciplines, and I guess five different disciplines if you add in the mental side of stuff, nutrition side of stuff, and then swim, bike, run, and then strength training. So, I mean, it's a six discipline sport, which I found fascinating because, had to master all of those components in order to be successful. And then just started doing racing, just sprint triathlons, loved it. It was fast. It was explosive, fell in love with cycling. And just found this new world. I loved the community, the weekend races, the people. It was individual, but it was team, it was camaraderie, it was family. So all those things. And then our journey over the past decade has taken us on a very unique path of seeking, put human potential, mind, body, spirit, and what was possible. So that's kind of the quick version of where we're at today and how we got started on this crazy journey. And then, like you mentioned very kindly in the intro, multiple world records, most half Ironmans, most full Ironmans, most consecutive Ironmans, 50-50-50, all those amazing fun adventures that we got to have a front row seat to.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you know, the accomplishments speak for themselves, but the journey is to me what's so interesting. So when, you know, the first thing that occurs to me, I mean, you're right, it's a six discipline sport. I mean, it takes time to do anything well, much less to do six things really well.
Yeah.
At what point, like, was there a point where you realized, okay, if I'm going to do this at an elite level, I'm going to have to commit, let's say, X amount of time to it. That's probably not, it's going to require some fundamental changes to my life.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I like to draw the analogy of like New Year's, and we set New Year's resolutions and goals, and everybody knows what they want, man. And they want, you know, the bigger house. They want more meaningful relationship. They want vacation time. They want more money, the bigger house, the cars, all these things, right? And everybody writes out this list of what they want. And very few people take the time to write out the list of what it's going to take and what they're willing to sacrifice in order to get there. And so there was, you know, on any journey, there's going to be different moments that require different levels of sacrifice. And over time, we've gotten better at communicating, understanding what those short-term sacrifices are going to be, understanding that like this isn't a forever sacrifice, and this is what needs to be done in order to accomplish that goal. And because it's been a family journey, those conversations were had with myself, my wife, my kids, you know, as a family, as a unit. How's this going to impact everybody here? Yeah. How's this going? What sacrifices does everybody need to make? Who's going to take a more front role on the team? Who's going to be more passive role? And what does that all look like? And so, and we started this journey when our kids were super little. And I really believe that.
And if I can interrupt, but no, how long ago was that? How many years has it been this journey?
So the first world record that we did, so my first full Ironman was in 2008. The first full marathon was 2004. First world record was 2010. And then the rest of the journey is from there. And I, you know, with my kids being super little when we started there, you know, I believe kids are products of our environments. And for them, it was totally normal what we were doing. And they grew as we grew through the challenges. And every time we kind of upped the level to find our potential, they upped their level too in terms of being kids and being on that journey with us. And, you know, we have a front row seat to our kids, and they love it, man. In fact, my daughter now, who's 20, my oldest, works for me full time and doesn't want any other job. Like, she loves the brand. She loves what we stand for. She's been on the entire journey. She's had very key pivotal roles in what we've done. And so it's been wild, man. It's been fun.
That's so cool. You know, I have a 17-year-old son who I very much see. He's got 1 year left of high school, but I very much see him graduating into, I mean, he's been through some of Entre's events, and he's very into our culture. And I totally see that same path for him. And it's so encouraging and exciting to me to hear about these stories of kids that are going, that have that opportunity to follow their parent into a very non-traditional, you know, potentially really fulfilling and distinct experience of life. That's not, you know, it's the reason you do what you do and I do what I do, is we just don't want we don't want that humdrum life that so many people kind of settle for. Yeah, and to be able to give that to our kids is just amazing.
Yeah. And just another real quick story that experience that I recently had with my second oldest daughter. She graduated high school a year early, and she's in beauty school now. And she made that commitment to go to school. And in beauty school, part of the schooling is people make appointments to get their hair and everything done, and the students do that work. And she came home literally 3 days ago and was like, I cannot believe these students just don't show up for class when they know they have made commitments to people that are counting on them. Mm-hmm. And it's, and she was like, and the excuse they give is that they're tired or they feel overwhelmed or all of these things. And I was, it was kind of a really cool parenting moment for me, because she was like, dude, we all struggle, but we make commitments and we work through those problems, but we do what we say we're going to do. And I was just like, yeah, girl, you know? And so she was like, I'm just like everybody else too. I'm tired. I'm juggling a full schedule. I have anxiety in my life. Sometimes I don't want to go in, but I made that commitment. And so I was really, really proud of her in that moment and having that realization, that comparison. And I kind of ended the conversation with like, just imagine, I said, just think how fortunate you are knowing that that's your competition. And yeah, and yeah, where you're at and the confidence you should have moving forward in life. Like, no, I've got these life principles and I'm living them, and I struggle like everybody else and my kids do. And, you know, but we try to teach them through example. And I love seeing them apply it to real life and recognize the differences on the path that they're on because of the choices they're making and the paths that ultimately their competition's on.
Yeah. I tell people sometimes, I'm like, you know, other people, they do tend to make life very difficult in some ways, but also based on how difficult they make it for themselves, they'll also make it a lot easier for you.
Yeah.
They knock themselves out of the race.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, look, the only way to guarantee your failure is to stop showing up.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that you will beat, not because you beat them, but because they simply took themselves out of the game.
Yeah.
And you beat them. And I've had a lot of opportunities. We got to do a race called the World's Toughest Race in Fiji. And I'm talking, this was like map and compass, 10 days of like survival and jungle and ocean kayak, all the stuff. And the host Fijian team was given a spot. And it's a 10 episode series on Amazon Prime. It's kind of fun. But the Fijian team was dead last, and they were given a spot in the race. They had terrible equipment, no coaches, no training camps, and all these teams from around the world came in like heavily qualified and well coached and well trained, and the Fijian team ultimately came in last, but not really, because half of the teams quit and took themselves out of the race because it was too hard. And so ultimately that Fijian team, one, they were gritty out of necessity, and two, they understood time versus movement, and they just kept chipping away at the task until it got done. Like, they were like, well, we'll just keep moving. We're going at a slow pace, but we're just going to keep chipping away. And they beat every single team that took themselves out of the race.
You know, that's interesting. That reminds me, have you heard the story of, there was like that, and I don't remember a lot of the details, but there was like that competition at one point in the early, I want to say early 20th century, to be the first person, the first team to reach the South Pole with sled dogs.
No.
And so there were two teams, and one team, we use this as a training model in our company, but one of the teams, their MO was on sunny days, go as far as we can, and on stormy days, just stay in our tents. And the other team was like, you know, I think it was like on a good day, you can go 30 miles, on a crappy day, you can go 15 miles. And so the second team, they said, okay, we're just going to go on a crappy day, like a stormy day, we're going to go 15 miles. And even on the clearest day, we're going to stop at 30 miles, even if there's time left. So one group took the use good conditions and duck down from bad ones approach. And the other one just said, just try to do something every day, regardless of conditions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first team, they ended up freezing to death and having to eat themselves to try to live or something horrible.
That escalated quickly.
Yes. Yeah. And the second team got to the South Pole and they won the race. And I forget the name, who was the explorer, but it was a really, really good metaphor of like, when it's crappy, you still got to show up. Mm-hmm. And also don't wear yourself out on the good days to the point where you think, oh, it's okay, I'll make it up, or I'll rest on the bad days. Like that's a defeatist psychology. I don't know. It's a really good example. That's kind of what you just reminded me of.
Yeah, I love that.
But, and it'd be better if I could remember the actual like names and characters. And
I think it was effective.
We can Wikipedia it and sound more intelligent, but so let me ask you this. Okay. 2008, you said you did your first full length triathlon.
Yes.
Okay. So I live in St. George. We literally just had the St. George Ironman
World Championship
3 days ago on Saturday, and it's Tuesday, and you know, the streets were all blocked off, and I just stayed home because I don't want to fight the crowds. But you know, there were like all these crazy tough people here that you can just tell who they are, right? They kind of like vibrate in a different wavelength, and you see them in the restaurants and whatever. But I'm trying to imagine you finishing that first triathlon full length. And I mean, if you finish an Ironman, you're like one of the toughest people around, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody else is like, I'm so tough, I finished this Ironman. And in your mind, clearly there was some level of, okay, I have not arrived yet. My work is not done. And there's got to be more than this. Take me back to that moment when was that when like the seed was planted that like, maybe there's a whole other level I can take this.
Yeah, it was interesting because when I did my, you know, I just like everybody else that gets into the sport, the biggest race is the World Championships, and this is the only year, and it was because of the pandemic that it wasn't in, Kona, Hawaii, and it was in St. George, and I had a lot of athletes that did it and loved it and had an amazing experience. And when I did my first, you know, because I saw the World Championships when I was first racing, and I got super excited. I'm like, I just want to do one of these. And that was it. Like, that was my goal. And again, that's where I believe the potential was. Like, I was like, oh, I can do one. And then
that was the mountain, so to speak.
Yeah, that was the mountain.
Yeah.
And when I did that first one, you know, it's such a steep learning curve in the sport, and you're always trying to better. And I did that first one, and I was like, that sucked, and it was amazing, and I know I can do better. And then you go back to the drawing board and figure out, okay, how do I overcome this, and how do I improve here? And then you keep showing up every single day. And so when I first started doing it, after my first one, I was like, okay, I want to do one more of that, and how do I get better at that? And then as I started to progress through that, I just fell in love with the sport, and I loved challenges. And we just kind of broke our first world record accidentally. And I was just like, look, I want to help other people. I want to make a difference. And we just started raising money for charity through racing. And at the time we called it the Try and Give a Damn Project, because we were raising money to build dams in Africa. And about halfway through that journey, I was like, man, I wonder how many someone's done in a year, official races. And I looked it up, and we were on pace to break that record. And I was like, holy cow, this is fun. And that's kind of what put us on that journey. And then when you finish that first record, you're like, man, I don't want to be the half Ironman world record holder. What's the full world record? And then we really started to hone in on human potential and the next challenge for us. And for us, it was always the next natural step in the progression of what we were doing, because we were the only person or group that had that perspective on what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what did it. After my first one, I didn't jump right into the bigger challenges. I was like, okay, how do I get better at doing this? And I think that's a huge mistake that people make, is they either see someone else or get inspiration from something, and they go, I'm going to do 100 Ironmans. And the problem is, you can't go from 0 to 100. You can't see someone else's headline and go, that's my potential. And it could be your potential, but you have to take and respect the process, the journey, and the steps that it takes to get to that moment, right? And so when I first started, I didn't know how to swim. I didn't have a bike. Like, my potential or pursuit of potential was a sprint triathlon. Like, I was learning how to swim. I have a picture of my very first race where I'm gripping to the edge of the pool. I'm gasping for air. I've got a nose plug on. I'm contemplating drowning, jumping out of the pool. And nobody would have looked at that guy right there in that moment and said, yeah, right there, he's gonna break multiple Guinness World Records. He's going to go on and set endurance sports history. But that's the truth, is everybody's journey starts somewhere. And I think people are scared to start. And that's an important message.
So from 2015, that's when you did the 50-50-50.
Yeah.
And forgive me, I may jump around a bit. I have so many questions.
You're good.
And then 2021 is you did the 100, it was 101, right? Like you did 100 and you're like, yeah, just one more for grins, right?
it didn't unfold quite like that, but yes.
Okay. That's my story and I'm going to tell it. Right.
Okay.
just throw off another full length triathlon.
Yeah.
So there's 6 years in between. Yeah. And this is really the thing that I'm interested in. I'm trying to dig into is like the preparation, like the race, you know, what does Sun Tzu say, right? The battle is won long before it is fought, or it's won or lost long before it's fought. So talk to me about that six, whether it's those 6 years or the year buildup, like whatever it is, whatever your preparation sequence is, like, can you take us through the art and science of how to get ready for something you know is going to be literally so hard it could kill you?
Yeah. And I think I'm going to kind of shock or not shock, but like, it'll be interesting my response to this. So we'll back up a little bit. Leading up to the 50 in 2015, I was catapulting from each of those experiences, mountaintop, see the next mountain, and got right to the bottom of that one to try to get up it. And that was building the foundation, building upon building upon building until I could do the next one. And
can I interrupt with a question?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but when you say the foundation, how much are you talking about physical stamina, VO2 max, growing new capillaries, et cetera, versus a different type of psychological foundation in the mind?
Both at a very high level. Okay. The only way to gain mental toughness, number one question to get, how do I become more mentally tough? The only way to gain mental toughness is through action, activity. You gain that knowledge by doing. You're not going to listen to you and I chatting and be more mentally tough. Right. You're not going to read a book, become more mentally tough. You have to take those principles and then apply them in your life through action. And then it's just like a muscle, right? I'm not going to read Muscle Magazine and bam, have massive arms and a stout chest, right? It's okay. I'm going to take what I just read and learned. I'm going to look at those images. I'm going to get inspired, motivated, and I'm going to do something in the gym. Same with mental toughness. You've got to apply a knowledge. It's a muscle. And if you don't continue to exercise it, it atrophies as well.
Okay.
So 2015 finishes. And I said, nothing's next, man. Like, I'm satisfied. I've reached physical mental limits, but we also made mistakes during the 50 and wanted to find out, you know, ultimately how to become better and stronger every single day. Well, after the 50, our lives changed and it shot us into this world of speaking and a book and the documentary and all these, like, I didn't grow up saying,
how old were you when you finished the 50?
39.
So is that an age where it would be considered that, hey, you might have hit your prime and we're not expecting any more from you from here?
Yeah, for sure. I think endurance men's prime is 35 to 40 or 30 to 40, kind of in that range. You kind of hit your peak. It's not a young man's game. It's not an old man's game. It's kind of like takes a long time to get fast over a long distance. And endurance comes over time by building those foundations and that, you know, like we've been talking about. So what was interesting is my life changed. You got thrown into this world. I didn't grow up be like, I want to be a motivational speaker. I want to be a thought leader. I want to be all these things. It was furthest from my mind. Actually, I'm more of an introvert than anything else. And after the 50, I was like, I'm satisfied. I'm good. Never going to do that again. But because of the mistakes that we made and during the 50, I was like, you know what? I wish I could redo the 50. But I never wanted to redo the 50 because it was so chaotic. It was so filled with logistical problems. There was just so many things that prevented me from finding out how many consecutive Ironmans can I do.
And the logistics is a lot of that because of the whole state by state thing.
Yeah, the United States is massive. And so you've got to do an Ironman during the day that takes 12 to 17 hours. And then you got to figure out how to get to the next state, set up, do it again, rinse, repeat. There's so many unknowns, chaos, confusion, mechanicals.
So it's interesting. You kind of commingled physical limits with like a bunch of logistics and stuff that I get your point. It's like, you got to wonder, well, what could I have done if the only challenges were physical?
Correct. Physical and mental. Yeah. And so I said, okay, for the next 5 or 6 years, I didn't get complacent, but my focus and attention was on helping others achieve their version of hard. I believed I'd reached that potential of what I wanted to do. back of my mind, want to redo the 50, never want to redo the 50. And then the pandemic hits. As a speaker, as a coach, as an athlete, my calendar gets wiped clean. Mm. And I said, here's an opportunity. If I can remove chaos, if I can remove logistics, if I can put team and systems in place, could I now go double what everybody thought was impossible, truly chase my physical, mental potential? And I call it, could I defy logic? And just, here's what's crazy is, you know, you just talked about preparation and all this stuff. Well, I had stopped preparing for 5 years because I was never going to do this again. And when the opportunity presented itself, you know, the pandemic hits and you can look at it as I've been dealt a raw card, or this could be an opportunity. What am I going to do with it? And for me, it was like, this is an opportunity. I can reset my history. I can do better than I did before, and I can possibly chase new limits. And so I did a 4-month training camp, and I promise you 4 months is not enough to get ready for 100 consecutive Ironmans. And for me, I was relying on my career, my past experience, my mental toughness. And ultimately we, you know, the documentary for the 100 is going to be unbelievable. It's going to release later this year. But what we endured, a lot of it was because of lack of preparation, physically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I had enough knowledge and experience mentally to navigate some of that pain and conditions that we had to get through it successfully. I believe in life, like, you can accomplish a lot of things. It's how you want to feel and navigate that experience is ultimately based on your preparation. And so somebody could go out and do an Ironman and not do a lot of preparation. Your level of suffering is going to be much more elevated than if you prepare properly and that actual race day becomes more of a victory lap than anything else. Because you've done the work. And so it was a unique experience on the 100 because I wasn't spring vaulting from the previous moment of seeking potential, but I was rather like removed for, 5 years, 5+ years, and then go, here's an opportunity. I'm going to make the best of it. I don't know how big this window is, and I've got to figure it out along the way. And, you know, do I wish I would have been more physically prepared? Absolutely. Would the story have been as compelling, and would have I learned as much, and would I have an opportunity to teach what I learned in that quarter of a year because I was physically underprepared? Absolutely. And in fact, it's a super long story because, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, but ultimately it was one of the greatest blessings of the campaign that I was so injured and broken that I had to walk a lot of the marathons, but that allowed people from around the world to come join me. And every single day without fail, people would say, I'm so grateful you're walking, because I wouldn't have been able to join you otherwise. And that is really the whole purpose of why we do what we do, is to give people the sense of community and inclusion and an experience. And if we were performing at a high level like I wanted to, and like we did in previous years, that opportunity wouldn't have presented itself. And I don't believe the 100 would have had the meaning that it did.
Well, yeah. And it's cool because to make the experience less dismissible for other people, it actually, I can see the value in saying I wasn't even in the greatest shape, because if the balance of physical and mental, you're like, I was having to lean that much harder into the mental strength because I wasn't as conditioned as I could have been physically. That actually makes the story and the message more applicable for other people who are probably never going to be in that good a physical shape, but anybody can play the mind game at any level they choose over time.
Yes. And I will push back on you just slightly. If I was completely removed, very out of shape, and in a unhealthy, obese position, right, it doesn't matter how strong I am mentally, there's going to be a breaking point physically where it doesn't matter how strong I am mentally. And the exact opposite is also true. If I was extremely fit, but didn't have any mental experience to be able to break through some of those difficult moments, it also doesn't work. And so here's the conclusion that I've ultimately come to, because it is a big question I get, like, are these challenges more physical or are they more mental? And you know, a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's definitely way more mental. And that is true, but you can't tap into that mental side if you're physically unable to endure and physically in a position to be, to perform that physicality. And so I believe there's a point where you need to be 100% physical, 100% mental. And at some point in time, the mental is going to pop up a little bit to help drag this physical specimen through what he's doing. And to me, I firmly believe that we have a very strong spiritual background and connection to a higher being. And I believe that even if you're 100% physical, 100% mental, it means nothing without the umbrella of spirituality. And so this has been a journey of physical, mental, and spiritual.
Yeah.
And then we could also throw an emotional in there too. And I believe emotional, spiritual are somewhat connected. So it's interesting. You need to be 100% physical, 100% mental underneath an umbrella of spirituality.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm wondering if you could take us into a singular moment within the 50, within the 101, either way, some moment. Let's use the 101, unless you feel like the other is better for illustrated purposes. But I'd like to find a moment when the question enters your mind, can I physically do this? Because I know you had like an issue with your shins and like there were other physical things you were contending with.
Yeah.
And that moment of doubt creeps in, and it's that mental toughness / spiritual grounding that pushes you through it. Like, can you take us inside that moment and maybe even almost have us relive your thought track? I think that would be really powerful to hear.
Yeah, it's interesting because we were just so physically broken so early. I mean, as early as day number 5, and to mentally be staring down a loaded weapon of 95 more to go. It is just so overwhelming. Hmm. And I remember just, you know, I believe that we just keep showing up and something will happen or our bodies will adjust or something. And I remember it just got so bad by day 15. And I went home and I was literally waiting for the moment my leg was going to snap and break. And I was like, well, that's what I'm willing to do. And that'll be a reason the public will say, okay, well, you gave it everything you got and physically you just broke down.
Yeah.
And you probably should have prepared a little better physically. But by day 15, I got home and, you know, we did the whole thing around our home in Utah and we thought, okay, that'd be a way to give ourselves a better chance.
By the way, you're at 4,000 or 5,000 feet above sea level for all.
Yeah, about 5,000 feet. Okay. And we did it March 1st. Day number one was 18 degrees outside.
That's my birthday, by the way. So
yay, good day. Hey, here we go. Yeah. I was celebrating.
And by the way, birthday. You ended on my anniversary. So that's cool. Kind of crazy. Oh,
June 9th or June 8th?
June 8th. Yeah.
June 8th. Okay. That's perfect. But I remember getting home, you know, finishing the day, just completely broken. And I had a conversation with Sunny, and who's my wife. And I just said, hey, I don't know how, I'm going to keep showing up, but I don't know how to manage this level of pain for another 85 more days. I was just trying to like get around it in my head. I was trying to wrap my head around what it's going to take. And I was just so broken. And she was like, hey, listen, we've been on a long journey. We've learned a lot of things together. And she said, you've put together a world-class team. And I need you to trust in your team tonight and allow them to put you back together. And then she said, I only need you to do one thing. And she says, I just need you to show up tomorrow and start. Because we have no idea when the next miracle is going to present itself. And if you take yourself out of the game, we're never going to find out. And we're never going to know what would have happened. And so every morning I'd wake up and I'd be like, hey, maybe today's the day a miracle is going to happen. And I won't have to endure this to the level that I am. And very long story short, a gentleman showed up on the trail and he is the world leading manufacturer of carbon plated shin braces. And he happened to live on the trail that we were running on. And he said, these are custom made, they won't fit you. But over the course of today's marathon, I believe if I meet you every quarter mile, you tell me where it hurts, I'll take it into the back of my truck, I'll machine meld it, and we'll get it to where it fits you. And if we can get that, this will offload your shin. It'll replace kind of the job that your bone's doing. It'll give your body an opportunity to heal as you continue to do 140 miles a day. And we got that thing dialed in and got it to where we offloaded my shin and gave my body the tools and opportunity it needed to heal or give me a break mentally. And I was ultimately in the shin brace for full time for 5 weeks and then in and out of it as we were managing the rest of what we were doing. But those stress fractures started to heal themselves to the fact that on day 100, I ran the marathon with no shin braces on.
And that happened around what day when you met that guy?
Between day 15 and 20.
So I'm like being vicariously emotional. I'm such a sap. I just think that's so beautiful. If you take yourself out, we'll never know. We'll never give that miracle the opportunity to present. And then damn it, if it didn't present.
And fast forward a couple key moments, like on day 59, we'd broken our own world record. We reset our past. We'd executed to perfection. We did every moment outside and all the elements and we changed public perception. And then on day 59, tragedy struck and I was in a catastrophic accident on my bike. I was knocked unconscious. And then we found out I broke my back in that accident and ended up doing 41 consecutive more Ironmans with a broken back. And, you know, we often wonder why do we keep showing up? Why, you know, and I tell my kids all the time, like we never know when somebody's watching and we need to set the best example we can at all times. And I have countless stories of people on day 80, 90, 95, even 100. A good example is a lady showed up. She'd never heard about our journey, our story, was invited by a friend to come run a few miles with us on day 100. And almost a year later, well, maybe about 6 months, I got an email from this random girl. And she said, "You don't know me, but you saved my life." And she was going down a destructive path and she showed up on day 100 and ran a few miles with us and ultimately saw our suffering and that we continued to show up. And she took all those lessons that she learned in that moment and applied them to her life, did a course correct, changed her life. And I often think, and this is why I continue to show up with our team and do the things we do, because I often think, had I quit early on, I would have never had the moment or the opportunity to impact her life. And I think that's so valuable in all of our lives as we navigate this journey. Like if you quit today because it's hard, you're missing a beautiful opportunity to impact somebody else's life because someone's always watching, whether it's your kids, whether it's your parents, whether it's an associate, whether it's a complete stranger. And my whole purpose in life is to give people hope and to help them on their journey. And so I can't stop showing up because who am I now going to miss an opportunity to impact and shift their mindset and the way that they're navigating their journey. And if I can give somebody hope by me showing up, I'm going to continue to do that.
So in those moments, and I'll say, yeah, I only have my own experience to even try to relate to, which the longest run I've been on is 20 miles. I trained for a marathon once something came up and I never even ran the marathon, but I had done some 15, 20 mile training runs. And I'm just thinking about those moments, which even sounds almost like laughable, but those moments when like, you're like, I could stop, but if I don't need to, I remember telling myself, I don't need to keep going. I just need to not stop.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if you could go in those moments. It's a two-part question. One is, what is the immediate provocation in the moment to keep yourself from stopping? Like, was there a mantra? Was there a conviction? Was there an aphorism? And then secondly, whatever that impetus was that you came back to again and again and again to just simply not stop, at its deepest level, was it about you or was it about them? Meaning the people that you were doing something for?
Yeah, I think both, but at a high level, it's for my kids. Cause I believe that we set expectations for our children and then we live and set the example for them to watch and experience and see. The first part of that question was, say it again.
Sorry, that momentary thing that you keep coming back to just not stop.
Yeah. So here's what's interesting. I think it's important to stop, not quit, but to pause. Because in those moments, we are, they're moments to cry, to reflect, to internalize, to analyze, and feel. And I think we live in a society where, especially as men, it's not okay to stop and feel and cry and process, that we just need to keep pushing, showing up, grinding, all these things, like this huge macho approach to things. And I think that's destructive. And through all of our journeys and trials, myself and members of my team, none of us ever stopped with the intent of quitting or needed to be talked in to keep going. It was, I need a moment to process, feel, cry, release, and then we'll keep going. Mm-hmm. And we respected that within the team. And I think that's super important to pause often, to reflect, and to shift or course correct. And when we would have those moments of pause, it wouldn't be long. We'd have quick turnarounds and we'd get back to task. And whenever we would have those moments of pause to feel, to reflect, we'd have a mantra to keep going or to restart. And it was three simple words. And we actually have a shirt on our website, ironcowboy.com. And the shirt says, "Here we go." And as soon as we said the words, "Here we go," it was a complete mind and body reset. And then we were good and we could go again. But those moments of pause are super important, because without pausing, we're shoving emotions and experiences down to one day where we explode, which will force us to stop because we're incapable of moving forward because we're in complete disarray. And so those moments of pause are so important for us to be able to continue long-term on the journey.
You know, that's a really interesting kind of paradigm. I think a lot of us think about building, you know, whether it's literal or figurative, building the muscle to endure, building the muscle to keep going. But how many of us ever really think about building the muscle of systematically restarting?
Yeah, because I think that's probably the most important thing, because people need to understand at a very high level that we're not perfect and that we're going to make mistakes along the way. And the problem is we buy into this belief that we have to be perfect. And then when we make one mistake, we spiral and turn into a complete dumpster fire and we don't restart. And as soon as we come to the knowledge that we're not perfect, we're going to make mistakes, we course correct and get back on task. That's how you win. And though that's a process that you should go through continually in order to keep moving forward. And without that pause or that course correction, I believe it'll be your ultimate demise and is a fast track to failure.
Yeah. And how liberating is it to know that you have trained your ability to restart so well that, you know, if you need to stop, you can stop and you won't stay stopped when it's time to start again, because you've trained for that too.
Yeah. And I think that's the most important thing. One of my favorite concepts that I like to talk about is catastrophizing. And catastrophizing is looking at an event in the future that hasn't happened yet. It's typically the worst case scenario. And then we give it all of our power and attention. Mm. And if we don't use those opportunities to pause and stop, we start to put all of our focus and attention on those futuristic, impossible moments that we can't control. And then once that moment happens, or we bring it to fruition or reality, we're forced to stop. And now the journey ends. And so I believe those moments of pause, self-reflection, and the ability to get going prevents us from catastrophizing a mythical event in the future. Because when you're doing something hard and you're in the moment, you need all of that energy in order to keep going and that energy motivation to restart. Well, if we're so focused on a mythical worst case scenario in the future, that restart process becomes very difficult. And so you have to figure out what your triggers are, put a good team around you, communicate through those moments, process, and then figure out a good trigger to get going again. And ours was just simple three words: here we go. And as soon as we or anybody on the team said, here we go, boom, no hesitation, reaction, get back up, keep going. It's time.
That's so beautiful and elegant. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so I'm gonna ask you one last question.
Sure.
Was there ever, and I have an agenda behind this question, I'll just disclaim that, right? Disclose that right up front. Was there ever a perfect mile or even a perfect 100 yards or even a perfect moment when you're like, okay, right now, we're doing everything right?
It was interesting, and this takes you all the way back to the 50 on day 30, when I had kind of a complete meltdown, one of those moments where I had to stop, and it was one of those moments where I was learning how to restart. And I literally got off my bike in the middle of that 112 mile bike ride on day 30, found a small patch of grass, and I just started to cry. I broke down, and I was just feeling and processing, and it was a moment where I was like, is this worth it? Like, what are we doing? Can I manage this level of pain? Can I continue with this level of physicality? Is everybody right that this isn't possible? And then I just, you know, reached into my memory bank to when we lost everything in the economy and we used to own a mortgage company. And my wife and I just kind of banded together and said, you know what, we can be perfect for just one moment at a time. And we can build on that success, that momentum, and we can rebuild our future one moment at a time. And so I was laying there in that patch of grass and I looked over at my bike and I was like, you know what? I know how to turn the pedals over in a perfect revolution one time. And that's all I have to do. I just have to get back on my bike and turn the pedals over one time. I got to be perfect for 1 second. Hmm. And I believe that anybody in their darkest hour, their darkest moment, can be perfect for 1 second. And that's how you regain and start back getting momentum. Success breeds success, confidence breeds confidence. And in those moments of impossibility, I would focus on being perfect for 1 second until I could put together 60 seconds. And I'm like, holy shit, I was perfect for 1 minute. And then all of a sudden you're perfect for an hour and you're perfect for a section. And then all of a sudden you had a perfect day. And you're like, oh man, I love that. And now I'm gaining momentum and I can be perfect. And if you look at our history and what happened during the 50, after that moment on day 30, those last 20 Ironmans of the 50 were my fastest. If you took the average time from those last 20, they were my fastest. And my 50th day was my fastest of all 50. And it was because I learned how to have those fast turnarounds. I learned how to stop and restart, but I learned how to be perfect for 1 second and stack those on top of each other. And that's ultimately what leads to our success, because everybody gets so overwhelmed with the enormity of something. And all they have to do is like, what's the one thing I can control? What's the one thing I can do right now that's going to move the needle and get me closer to where I am? I have the option to quit, or I have the option to be perfect for 1 second. And if you continue to choose the option to be perfect for 1 second, you cannot lose in life. It's how you win at the highest level.
I'm so glad I asked the question. That I almost feel like that's our moment to hang in the air, is that anybody can be perfect if they'll make their world small enough.
Yeah.
21. I did the math. 21,230.6 miles across 151 full length Ironmans.
How many miles did you say?
21,230.6.
That's accurate. Yep.
140.6 times 151.
Yep.
And perfection 1 second at a time. That's beautiful.
Perfection 1 second at a time, and you get an opportunity to be one of 7 billion people in the world, which is very cool to say.
Coming up on 8 billion, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for being a guest on Unlock Your Potential, man. This has been beautiful and spiritual and inspiring and humbling, and I appreciate you.
I appreciate the opportunity to share our family's journey, and hopefully someone on the other end of this gains hope and perspective on their journey. So thank you for the opportunity, Jeff.
Of course. How can the world go get much more of you, which I'm sure they're hungering for at this point?
Yeah, you know, we got a lot of things going on, but the biggest resource or platform is just our website, ironcowboy.com. And our biggest social media platform is Instagram, Iron Cowboy James. We link everything on there. We just launched a mindset course. We just created a very cool NFT. We're working on the second book, the second documentary. Current documentary is on Amazon Prime. Our current book's called Redefine Impossible. And if anybody has any questions, wants to reach out to us, I do all my DMs. Me and my daughter, are active on social. We answer all the questions. We interact with everybody. We want people to, like I said, gain hope. And that is through conversation, that is through learning, and that is through community and through family. And that's who we are, and that's what we're about. So feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions, comments, concerns, love, criticism, whatever it is. We're also on a journey, and we want to grow just like everybody else. And we're continually seeking our potential. And I believe we can do it together. So again, thanks for the opportunity.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening. And especially if you like or share or leave a review, thank you for helping us spread the word. And thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.